This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park, Toy Mountain 2019, in support of the Salvation Army, going on live right in front of us, right behind us. We got the mountain growing. We got people dropping off toys. You got people dropping off cash donations. We're here tonight until 9 p.m. New unwrapped toys or cash donations get you an opportunity to enter in for a couple or a few great draws. Come out and join the party that's happening here at CF Polo Park.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Craig Button. You know Craig, of course, as TSN's Director of Scouting. Craig, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning to you, and my pleasure to jump on.
Well, we appreciate that, Craig. Obviously, we brought you on. We want to touch on the World Junior Hockey Championships, and we'll get to that in the course of the interview. But we want to start with the Winnipeg Jets, because we obviously are here in Winnipeg. We watch the Jets night in, night out. But we're always curious about the perception of the Jets from the outside, maybe from a guy who doesn't necessarily watch them as close as we do, but certainly has a different insight into what he's seeing on the ice, and you're obviously that guy. So, Craig, when you watch the Winnipeg Jets, particularly since the month of November when they've been playing better hockey, what are you seeing from the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, what you see is a team that really plays together, and they play with purpose, and they play with a real determination, and it's not just in one area. I mean, they work well together. They work defensively. They work offensively, and you know, I think I call it they have a real esprit de corps, and you know, the spirit of being together. And I think when you watch that type of an effort and you watch that type of cohesiveness, it's no accident they're having success. And you know, when you consider what happened in the off season with the changes on the blue line and then the uncertainty surrounding Dustin Byfuglien, you know, there was going to be some, I guess what I would call, you know, some uneven times. And that's certainly what happened for the Winnipeg Jets early on. But, you know, Paul Maurice has got a ton of experience. He's seen a lot of different situations over the course of his career. So when you're able to settle in and keep the team calm and have a plan to, hey, this is what we got to do. This is how we're going to go about it. It's not going to come overnight. And you have that sense of calm behind the bench as the leader. I think that becomes incredibly important. And I think it's really, really benefited the Winnipeg Jets. And what you see is exactly that type of team that really plays together and has a real good sense of purpose in how they play.
You know, Craig, over the summer, the Jets made the big trade, sending Trouba to New York for Neil Pionk, and obviously their first-round pick they got back from the Rangers. But Neil Pionk was the big unknown here in Winnipeg. Not a lot of people knew him. Now, you know, of course, it seems the opinion has completely changed from what we were hearing over the summer. But how impressed have you been with his play overall?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not surprised. Neil Pionk is a good player. And, you know, when the trade happened, I pointed out people may not know Neil Pionk, but he's a good player. He plays minutes. He handles the puck well. He skates. He's a competitor. He thinks the game. And, you know, there's so many players in the league, and you can't know every player. And when you have a player that, you know, might be somewhat of an unknown, you know, you can't expect everybody and the fans to know. So, but when you watch him play, and I think it's become very obvious to Winnipeg Jets fans that Neil Pionk is a very solid player. And, you know, the Jacob Trouba situation was such that Devin Cheveldayoff had to make a move. And, you know, that comes with the job. It comes with the territory. But then you try to add real good players. And just because people didn't know about him didn't mean they didn't get a good player. And also keep in mind they got their first-round pick back, which turned into Ville Heinola. So you're looking now at a really good young defenseman in Heinola and a really good, solid defenseman in Neil Pionk. So that is something that is absolutely positive for the Winnipeg Jets.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. Our guest is Craig Button, TSN's Director of Scouting.
And Craig, obviously we could talk Jets with you forever, but we want to get to the World Juniors, and specifically Hockey Canada recently announced the 31 players that are going to be at National Junior Team Selection Camp. That's coming up starting on Monday, of course, in Ontario. And we got to start off with the projected number one pick, Alexis Lafreniere. I saw your piece on TSN.ca, and there's obviously high expectations for him. You don't want to put even more pressure on him. But, I mean, what should be the expectations for him? Because obviously, you know, Canadian hockey fans are expecting him to be a top offensive player coming up in the Czech Republic.
Well, you could very well be looking at the best player in the tournament. You know, let's just rewind here a little bit with Alexi. So when you, and I'm going to go back a little bit. So, you know, as a 16-year-old, he went to the U18 tournament and dominated it. He was outstanding. Then he comes to the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament and was the MVP, dominated it. Last year in the CHL, best player in the CHL. And there's only, like, you know, when you consider what he did as an underage player prior to his draft year being the CHL player of the year, it tells you how good he is. So, you know, he's got the benefit of the experience last year playing at the World Junior Tournament. But when I put those two tournaments together, that's right in his wheelhouse in terms of age group. The 2000-borns and the 2001-borns. He's been a dominant player in there. Very well. And I quite think that he could be the best player in the entire tournament, not just for Canada.
Another highly ranked player that's draft eligible in 2020 is Quinton Byfield. He's been putting up significant numbers, of course, for the Sudbury Wolves of the OHL. Is this going to be the tournament, his coming out party, in terms of the Canadian hockey consciousness?
I think what ends up happening is there becomes a greater awareness of Quinton Byfield. I mean, that's what the World Junior Tournament does. I mean, it's coast to coast and everybody watching. So certainly, if you didn't know about Quinton Byfield or you didn't know how good he was, I mean, this is a stage and a spotlight that, you know, does put the best players on display, and Quinton is certainly one of those players. And, you know, but and that's the beauty of the World Junior Tournament, and it's not just players that are going to go on and have fabulous NHL careers, but even players just in the moment that capture the imagination of the fans. But Quinton Byfield is, I mean, he's an elite prospect.
You know, Craig, you recently profiled Avalanche fourth overall pick Bowen Byram, who currently plays for the Vancouver Giants. What role do you expect for him to play for Team Canada?
Whatever one they ask him to play. the guy's a complete defenseman. There's no area. I mean, when Michael Dick, the head coach of the Vancouver Giants, said to me this summer, he's a 200-foot defenseman, I had never, ever heard of it. I'd never even thought of it. But then as you thought about it, you go, wait a second. And Michael went through it really nicely, and I said, that's exactly what he is. So to just put that in perspective, Bowen Byram, there is not a square inch on the ice. There is not a situation in the game wherever he is on that ice or whoever he's playing against, and whether he has the puck or doesn't have the puck, where he can't make a significant impact. I mean, he's such an unbelievable player and such an unbelievable competitor that, you know, you go to this tournament and now you're going to measure yourself against the best players in your peer group. But Bowen Byram's just exceptional in his abilities and in his competitiveness and with his hockey sense. So, you know, I know one thing about Dale Hunter. Dale Hunter has no head. He doesn't care about your birth certificate. He doesn't care where you were drafted. He doesn't care about. He watches, and all you got to do is understand how good players are. Watch how much Dale plays them. Watch where he uses them. I know one thing. Bowen Byram is not going to have any problem being a significant player on this team because he will do all the things that are necessary to help the team win, and Dale recognizes that as well as anybody.
Craig, we wanted to ask you about Jacob Bernard-Docker. As you know, we're not too far north of Grand Forks, so we've had the opportunity to watch him play for UND, and you know, he struggled at times last year, but you know, he's really turning heads this year, almost a point per game defenseman for Bradbury and UND. And obviously, when you talk about, you know, him being the last cut last year, there's obviously, you know, a lot of good defensemen that you know, that he's going to have to beat out. But what would you say his chances are of making this year's Canadian lineup?
100%. because what Jacob is, Jake, there's not. I mean, if you want to go look at the highlight reels on Jacob Bernard Docker, there might not be any because there's not end-to-end rushes. There's not these puck dazzling moves and, you know, these great shots and these great moments. Jacob Bernard Docker is smart and he understands the game. And when you want the game to flow and to be able to move forward, that's what Jacob does. Gets to a puck, pass up, away you go. Close the play defensively. Just because his position is so strong, because his awareness is so outstanding, it's just a stick in the lane. Oh, I intercepted that pass. There is almost no wasted effort with him. And it's the one thing I always say is that you can't measure mental effort. There's a lot of players that are busy out on the ice and they're chasing around and running around, but they don't accomplish a lot. And one of the things you got to be really careful of, don't confuse activity with accomplishment. And when you watch Jacob Bernard Docker and you watch how steady he is and how composed he is and all this, and all at the same time, competitive, in the battle, understanding what has to happen in any regard. I mean, those are rock solid players. I mean, no question he's going to have a long NHL career, and I expect him to be a really important defenseman on this Team Canada iteration.
Craig, just a few more questions. You know, we got to throw in some of the Manitobans that were invited to camp. Keelan Addison, Pittsburgh Penguins draft pick, obviously plays for Lethbridge in the WHL. But wanted to specifically ask you about Joel Hofer because we obviously expect Oliver Rodrigue to be one of the goalies that ends up making Team Canada. But after that, is this completely wide open? And what have been your impressions of Joel Hofer, who's obviously, you know, putting up some real impressive numbers in the WHL for Portland?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that Joel is a great example of Hockey Canada's diligence. You know, just because you haven't been part of the program or you might not have had the notoriety, they're watching. They're watching all the time. And if you keep improving, you are going to be able to move forward and you're going to be able to have an opportunity. And Brad McEwen, the chief scout for Hockey Canada, I mean, he's tireless in terms of his work in watching players and in talking to people that are watching the players. And so the fact that Joel is there, I don't think would be a surprise to anybody that's watched Joel. People might say, where did this Joel Hofer come from? Well, there's players that come from someplace and there's players that were someplace that don't go anyplace. Joel is on the right trajectory. He's playing in a good team in Portland. But, you know, when he was in Swift Current, he was good. I think one of the biggest things that's happened with Joel is that maturity, that idea that, hey, listen, you know, I'm more comfortable in the net. I'm physically stronger. And a big part of goaltending is just, you know, that mental composure. And I think that, you know, Joel is really settled in the net, and that's what you're looking for at this tournament. So, you know, you get an opportunity to go to that camp and, you know, show what you're capable of doing. And again, Brad McEwen, Dale Hunter, Mark Hunter, the head of the management group, they're just looking. All they're looking for is who are the players that can help us play 7 games in 10 days to win the gold, including winning your last 3. That's all they're looking for. They don't care where you were drafted. They don't care if you were a part of the program. They don't care if you were a top prospect. Tell me the guys who can help us win the gold medal. And Joel is absolutely right in that category.
Last question for you, Craig. Craig Button, TSN Director of Scouting, is our guest. Who is Canada's chief competition this season, this year at the World Juniors for that gold medal that you just mentioned? And, you know, is there a player or two beyond the Canadian spectrum that you're really looking for or telling people to watch this kid because you're going to see something special?
Wow, okay. Well, your second question, there's a lot of players in this tournament. Hey, this is a best-on-best tournament. And, you know, the future of the NHL is going to be on display here. But so if I'm going to answer your first question, you know, in their pool, I think at this point in time, December 7th on a Saturday, I think that Russia is my favorite right now by a slight margin. If Noah Dobson becomes available for Team Canada, that could be enough to swing them into the favorite status. We won't know that for a period of time. You watch Game 2 of the World Junior Hockey Championships. The Russia-Canada game very well could be a preview of the gold medal game. Russia's deep. their age group. This age group has been highly successful. They have a real great balance throughout their lineup. And, you know, Yaroslav Askarov, a top player for the 2020 NHL draft, very well may be their starting goalie. He just won his first start in the KHL as a 17-year-old. He's played in the minor leagues in the KHL and has been exceptional. And, you know, Bragan doesn't play young guys unless you're capable on that. So that's one guy I would say to watch. Todd Colson was drafted by the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, he's got an engine as big as a fire truck. And he brings it at every point. But that's the game I would turn to and say, watch that, because that could very well be the preview of the gold medal match. Now, I don't know where you want me to go with the top prospects in this tournament, because there are so many. And, you know, I mean, Ville Heinola is going to be playing for Finland. They're in a pool with Sweden. They're not going to have any challengers in that pool because they're the two best teams. So they're going to be playing in the quarterfinal. They're going to be seeded 1 and 2, and they're going to be able to work on their game and develop their game in their pool. Lucas Raymond scored the game-winning goal in the U18 championship match last year in April, an elite prospect. Philip Broberg, who was eighth overall to the Edmonton Oilers, just a simply outstanding skater. One player that you may not have heard of, and I would encourage everybody to watch when Canada plays Germany, is a young man by the name of Tim Stützle. He plays in Mannheim. He's a German kid. He plays in Mannheim. He's playing in the DEL. He's one of the top scorers on his team and in the league, and he's 17 years old. And, boy, he's got some electrifying qualities like Patrick Kane. And, you know, you might not think that it'll be the third straight year there's going to be a German drafted in the first round. Tim Stützle, you're looking at a guy, in my view, top 10 player. So those are, I mean, there's going to be a lot more there, but I mean, that's just a little brief highlight of some of the players you can watch for at the tournament.
Boxing Day can't come soon enough. That's when the World Junior Hockey Championships will kick off in the Czech Republic. Craig Button is TSN's Director of Scouting. He'll be all over the tournament for the next few weeks. Craig, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time and insight. Have a great rest of your Saturday.
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Craig. We are live on location. We're at CF Polo Park. It's Toy Mountain 2019, proudly supporting the Salvation Army. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I think he made the right move here. I don't think you can go much further with the coach that kind of seems that the team has quit on. Listening to the Buffalo players after last game, they said it was the easiest game they ever played because the Devils didn't even come out and try. That is a big red flag for me that the coach is probably the problem.
That's NHL on NBC analyst Jeremy Roenick talking about the New Jersey Devils' decision to dismiss John Hines as their head coach. Alain Nasruddin is going to be their interim head coach. Pardon me, Alain Nasruddin is going to be their interim head coach. The Devils off to a very disappointing start to the season in the swamplands of Jersey. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're live at CF Polo Park. Toy Mountain going on in support of the Salvation Army. We're here until 9 p.m. tonight. We're accepting new unwrapped toys and cash donations. The mountain of toys is growing significantly behind us. I haven't really turned around in the last little hour. It's growing rapidly as more and more toys get dropped off here at CF Polo Park.
A little bit worried that there's going to be like a toy avalanche.
Well, yeah, that would. I actually thought you were going to jump. I thought you were going to jump from like the elevator, Ezzy, into that mound of
into
toys.
The stuffed animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
all I know is I can't wait to hit up Colonel's after.
Oh, yeah, we can smell it. It's wafting over.
Both of you guys do like your popcorn.
We do like our press box.
This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So the Devils make the coaching change.
Yep.
It comes on the heels.
What took so long?
Well, it comes on the heels of a 7-1 defeat at the hands of the Buffalo Sabres, which certainly was the final straw. But, you know, I feel bad for John Hines in the sense that Ray Shiro
didn't give him any goaltending?
Didn't give him any goaltending. Ray Shiro takes a lot of blame for the Devils' start to the season because they have a goaltending vacancy. You start the year thinking that Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider are going to be your goaltending duo. Did anybody really think that Schneider and Blackwood were going to be a good enough duo to keep the Devils afloat this season?
Schneider had an .852 save percentage. Mackenzie Blackwood, .899. Louis Domingue, who came in, they got him, I think, for a fourth-round pick.
I think a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. It was late.
Yeah, because he was playing at the AHL level, I think.
Yeah, he couldn't crack the lineup in Tampa Bay, and he's got an .870. Oh. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's amazing to me that this is a coach that everybody seemed to like before.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, the team apparently is quit on him, and he needs to go. Now, it's easy to change a coach versus all the players, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like goaltending is very good there.
Well, it's not even all the players that need to change. They need to figure out their goaltending situation. I don't care if the second coming of Scotty Bowman is your head coach right now. It's not going to make a difference when you have that goaltending.
Well, it's pretty clear to anybody that looks at the goaltending stats that the goaltending has been an issue. But to me, you can't just blame goaltending here because it's the way the Devils were losing. And, you know, you go back to the game against the Jets early on in the season. What was that, the second game of the year, guys?
Second game of the year.
And I think the Devils were up 3 goals or 4 goals.
Like, 4-0.
The Devils did that many times prior to John Hines being fired. And, you know, we had Steven Wino on back in October. He thought Hines was going to be fired back then, you know, 5 or 6 games into the season. So nobody should be surprised. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that it took this long. And yes, Mackenzie Blackwood hasn't taken the reins, and you know Corey Schneider is in the American Hockey League. They picked up Louis Domingue, obviously, who has now replaced Corey Schneider as the Devils' second goalie. But you know, you look at up and down the Devils' lineup. It's not just that they're not getting the goaltending. I mean, this Devils team has trouble moving the puck up the ice. I mean, you could look at a guy like Nikita Gusev. They traded draft picks, including a second rounder next year, to get Nikita Gusev. He makes $4.5 million a year. He's got what, 4 goals, 5 goals? I mean, Nikita Gusev hasn't been very good. I mean, P.K. Subban has struggled at times. Andy Green has struggled at times. His game is not where they would like it to be. So when you talk about the Devils, the defense is an issue. I mean, you expected, obviously, P.K. Subban to solidify your top four. I'm not putting this all on P.K. You guys know that I like him. I think we all do, and he's a good defenseman. But the point is, this is a flawed roster.
Yeah.
They don't have enough scoring depth. I mean, Taylor Hall's having a good year. Kyle Palmieri.
They're trading, you know, Hall.
Well,
I mean,
no, but what I'm saying is the guys that are in the lineup right now, I mean, you expected Hall, Palmieri, Nico Hischier to lead the offense, and they are. But, you know, Jack Hughes has struggled in that second-line center role. And again, Jack Hughes is going to probably score 80 or 90 points, you know, a few years from now. But point is, look up and down the roster. I mean, you can't just put it all on the goaltending. This team as a whole isn't very good. I agree. John Hines, you know, he takes the blame here, and Ray Shiro is now on his third head coach. But when you talk about, like, pardon me, he's on his second coach, you don't usually get to hire a third coach. The point is, you know, this Devils team wasn't getting it done. John Hines wasn't getting enough out of the Devils. The way they were losing was problematic from the beginning of the season.
Well, J.R., Jeremy Roenick, in that clip that we played, right. I mean, he talks about the team quitting on John Hines, which is what he says that they saw in that 7-1 loss to the Buffalo Sabres. Look, the Devils are flawed. It's not going to get any better anytime soon. They're going to be trading Taylor Hall in the next, you know, couple of months, by all accounts. So you wonder where this sort of organization is going right now.
Like, Pavel Zacha has 2 goals.
Well, yeah. He's been a big disappointment.
I mean, Travis Zajac, obviously, you know, good Winnipeg boy, 3 goals. Miles Wood, 3 goals. Like, these are guys that they expected to provide more offense, and they're not getting it. So, yes, you can point to the goaltending, and I agree. That's why, you know, as a Devils fan, at the beginning of the year, I couldn't pick them to be a playoff team because the goaltending is bottom 5 in the league, maybe even the worst in the league.
Right.
But you're also not getting contributions from players that you expected, and it doesn't just start with 1 or 2 guys. I mean, there are a bunch of guys like Nikita Gusev. I mean, he's been okay, but you know, they gave up a lot and gave him a lot of money to come in and be a top 6 guy.
And I think ultimately what it comes down to is he was almost doomed by his own success, right? He came in, coached 2 seasons. He didn't make the playoffs, but they weren't expected to. Mm-hmm. Then he had that good season.
Yeah.
I think they had 44 wins.
Well, Taylor Hall was the MVP.
Right, and they had the 44 wins, and everybody thought, okay, this is a team on an upward trajectory.
Yeah.
And then they take a step back last year and obviously look like they were taking a step back this year. So, you know, again, easiest move to do is to fire the coach. But now it's on the players, and we'll see what happens in New Jersey. Don't expect much.
Don't expect much. There you go. When we come back, now we're going to hear from Michael Tracos of Post Media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. You're on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Remember a couple minutes ago when I said that the mountain is growing right behind
yep,
us?
Yep.
I think the mountain has doubled in the last 15 minutes.
And there's a lot of toys for kids.
There are toys coming in by the bushel load. I'm not even sure how many toys make up a bushel. But there are toys coming in everywhere. There's a whole bunch of scouts here now dropping off toys. It's a great scene.
They meant hockey scouts. I was like, I don't see any.
No, none of those scouts. These are Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, things like that. Girl Guides, whatever it might be.
That'd be very specific, Drew. This is a hockey show.
I know it is. But anyways, it's a great scene. We're live here at CF Polo Park, Toy Mountain 2019, in support of the Salvation Army.
Are we going to get any Girl Guide cookies?
Maybe you want to go ask them if they have any cookies there, Ezzy. Although, I don't know if you need any more cookies. I just saw what you did to the... Somebody brought some baking, and, well, they said take one.
Yeah, that's gone.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Michael Tracos. You know Michael, of course, as the national hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. And sorry about the mix-up earlier today, guys. I thought we were on Pacific time or something.
All good. We'll deal with the geography and with the looking at a map a little bit later on.
Mike, have you been naughty or nice? Mike, have you been naughty or nice? We've got Santa here right in front of us at Polo Park. We just need to know what we have to tell Santa.
I believe in shades of gray, man. So there's no black and white with me.
We also have Spider-Man and Batman. So if things get out of control, you know, we're well protected.
Well, you guys might need it these days, right? You're stealing players from the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, depth matters. Day after you guys take Nick Shore away from us. We had a forward go down, so you know what, I'm going to send Batman over there for you guys.
Mike, obviously, let's start with Nick Shore then. You've been able to watch him in your time covering the Toronto Maple Leafs. What are your impressions of Nick Shore as a depth, you know, sort of fourth line center? What jumped out to you about Nick Shore?
Well, he's a pro's pro. You know, like he knows his role. He's going to play it to the fullest ability. He's not going to be able to jump up or down the lineup. I don't think he has that skill level, but if you slot him in as your fourth line center, he knows his job is to win faceoffs, not get scored against, and you know, try to wear down the other team. Not going to put up a ton of points, but he's not going to hurt you either. So for Paul Maurice, it's a totally safe option as a depth forward and a guy that can kill penalties as well. So you know, there was a reason why Mike Babcock loved the guy. It's just because he's safe and like I said, meat and potatoes type of forward.
You know, Mike, huge game obviously coming up tonight between the Leafs and the Blues. And you know, Sheldon Keefe, it was all looking really good when he took over for Mike Babcock. They won their, I think it was the first three games or first two games. Now they're struggling a little bit, struggling to score goals, pardon me. And you wrote recently about Austin Matthews and, you know, how he's still having difficulty playing the defensive side of the game. But what about his offensive side of the game? Because obviously earlier on this season, you know, it seemed like everything he touched was going in the net. I mean, what has to change here for the Leafs? Because obviously, you know, as it stands right now, I mean, they're you know, quite a ways out of a wild card spot right now. So they have to turn this around quickly.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, the Sheldon Keefe hiring had an initial just punch in the arm for the team. Since then, like you mentioned, I think it was after the third game, they've looked very much like the team that Mike Babcock was dealing with for the first part of the season. And, you know, I don't know if it's an effort, if it's a lack of compete or what, but I think it's simply you look up and down this roster and, they're missing maybe a piece here or there to complement all this skill. And, you know, for a team that has this much skill, they're not scoring a whole lot right now. You know, the power play has been okay. They're not drawing a whole lot of penalties. I think that's the big thing is you figure with, you know, Marner, how slippery he is, and Nylander, how fast he can move and how quick he can move, and even with Matthews always having the puck on his stick, I think the team would be near the top in drawn penalties. But fact, that's been one of the things that's really kind of escaped them this year. So, you know, they got to get that offense cooking. Just because defensively, I think that's where this team is still vulnerable.
So, Michael, what are they going to do about their backup goaltender? Because that seems to be the biggest question right now with this. One of the biggest questions with this Leafs team.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you could typically overlook in a year. Like, I think most fans probably can't tell you who the backups are in most of the teams. But, you know, and with how tight things are in the standings, yeah, you're right. You can't give up those, you know, maybe it's, what, 13 or 20 starts. Those, if you're going to lose 80% of them, then, yeah, you're probably going to miss a playoff spot. The Leafs, with their cap situation, just really haven't been able to pay a guy more than $650,000 or $800,000. It's kind of unfortunate because now they're going just kind of bottom of the dregs, and you know they don't have any faith in either Michael Hutchinson, who you guys know familiar with in Winnipeg, or they don't have any kind of confidence with their minor league goalie, who's probably just not an NHL caliber goalie. Let's face it. So for the first time, I think in like 2.5 years, they went back to back with Freddie Anderson, and don't be surprised if the points matter as much as they do in December, if we're going to see that route again in the near future.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army. Toy Mountain 2019 will be here until 9 p.m. tonight. Come drop off a new unwrapped toy or make a cash donation. Michael, you know, let's move away from the Leafs for a little bit, and as we sit here on December 7th, I'm a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's basically the Boston Bruins have already wrapped up the Atlantic Division. They have a 14-point lead on the second-place Montreal Canadiens, the same Montreal Canadiens team that is 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. So if you're the Bruins and you're almost home and cooled this early in the season, how do you avoid falling into the same fate that befell the Tampa Bay Lightning last season?
Yeah, and that's got to be in the back of their mind. And the other thing that's got to be in the back of their minds is this is a team that went all the way to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final last year. So that's a lot of hockey. And the one thing I'll say, guys, is that Boston really hasn't had a healthy lineup for most of the season. Like, whether it's been Krejci or Bergeron or some guys in the back end, whether it's Torrey Krug, they haven't really had that 100% of the roster. And, you know, that's the one thing that maybe can help them in that regard is that, you know, when the playoffs come, you figure guys are going to be playing through injury. So the things that are knocking Bergeron out of the lineup this early might be something that he just deals with come April or May. But if you get a full lineup, that changes everything. I think that was Tampa's problem, is that they didn't face any adversity, whereas Boston is already, I know we're saying facing adversity where they're running away with the standings.
It's a good problem to have.
But this is they're doing it while facing adversity. Like, I don't know how many man games they've already lost, but they've got to be near the tops of the league in that, especially with just the caliber of players who've been out. So the fact that you're winning without Bergeron, it's a huge bonus, I think, come springtime when you go, geez, how good were we without these guys? Now that we've got a full lineup, well, let's just roll past everyone.
Mike, if you're okay with moving to the West, you know, we talk about this a lot on this show, talking about the Central Division, and we're going to talk about this later, but the Minnesota Wild, I mean, they haven't lost in regulation, I think, in 3 months now. Obviously, I'm joking, but 8-0-3 in their last 11 games. They're now in that second wild card spot, and, you know, you look at the Western Conference standings, and you know, the Wild in the second wild card spot, the difference between, you know, second last, which is Anaheim, and the Wild, it's only 4 points. And obviously, you know, the Jets are firmly in a playoff spot right now. But which team has impressed you more as far as what they've been able to do, how they've been able to turn the season around? Has it been Minnesota just because they started off so poorly, or is it San Jose?
You know, it's funny. Like, you talk about Minnesota, and that was supposed to be the dog of the Central Division. And when people said, oh, the Central Division is the best division in hockey, and then you go, yeah, except for Minnesota, because they're going to be pretty much junk, because it's a bunch of old guys, and it's a coach that is basically on his way out. And here they are. I couldn't even name you probably anyone on their third line. And they don't lose games. And, you know, with the way that Winnipeg's playing, after everyone kind of counted them out with the Big Buck being out of the lineup, it's just amazing how things are working out in that Central. I wouldn't have predicted that Nashville would be the team that's been struggling. But go to your point. I'm more surprised about Minnesota. San Jose, with the way that they're playing, it was bound to happen. But, yeah, it's just you look around the standings, and whether it's Toronto not being in a playoff spot, whether it's the Rangers playing well above what anyone thought they'd be over in the West with Minnesota, Arizona, and Edmonton, it's been kind of, I don't want to say a crazy surprising year, but it's been a year where for some teams everything is going right, and for other teams it seems like everything is completely going the other way.
You know, Michael, with Mike Babcock and Bill Peters and, you know, Mark Crawford having problems, and even Peter Laviolette in Nashville had to come out with a statement about his conduct, do you think that that old school coaching mentality is going to, you know, the reckoning is here, or do you think this is just kind of a little blip and then it'll kind of recede into the background?
Oh, this isn't going in the background. I can guarantee that. I'm going off to Board of Governors meetings in California on Monday. Yeah, you heard me. I'm going to California, so avoiding all this nonsense. But
yeah, can we come with you?
Yeah, tough life. I'm sure they're just staying at a Motel 6, right? That's where the Board of Governors meetings happen?
My kids are already trying to find ways to sneak into my luggage, trust me. But, you know, this is going to be front and center. They're coming out with a code of conduct at those meetings. And talking with the Ontario Hockey League and CHL in general, they've had a code of conduct. They've had training for coaches coming into the league, and if there is any kind of problem areas where they completely tell them that the way you coached or were coached as a kid doesn't fly anymore. So that's coming for the NHL. This is the NHL's reckoning, and you know, you can say that they're treating all these players with kid gloves and it's a little jokey, and this is, you know, this is the era of the millennial, but like it or not, it's coming, guys. And whether it's simple motivational tactics completely have to change. You know, this is a shifting change, and I think it's starting from the junior levels, and you can be sure that, you know, those 60-year-old coaches, and there's not a whole lot of them in the NHL anymore, but for the ones that are there, they got to understand that what they did 10, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago, just doesn't fly anymore.
Michael, last question for you. The Nashville Predators, you touched on them briefly in your previous answer. They've won 12 of 27 games so far this season. When do the Predators press the panic button, and what does that panic button look like?
Yeah, I don't know what that panic button looks like. You know, they're going to try to trade Kyle Turris. They might have to trade maybe another defenseman, or even see if Pekka has got some value. But, yeah, the panic button should be pushed. You know, everything, all the hallmarks of Nashville where they prevented goals, they had great goaltending, a defense that everyone just loved. It doesn't seem to be the hallmarks anymore. So they're struggling big time, and they've got a lot of bloated contracts that, you know, just are really dragging them down right now. So I can see them completely missing the playoffs this year.
Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. You can read more of his work upcoming from the NHL Board of Governors meetings. Is it in Napa or is it in Palm Springs? I just want to know, you know, how you have to pack.
Well, I'm going to be in Monterey, and yeah, it's in Pebble Beach. So.
Oh, are you bringing your clubs?
I'm not. You know, I got to do some work, guys.
Yeah. Well, we're going to pour. We'll pour one out for you.
It's okay, Mike. We'll hold it down on the prairies. It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Michael Trakos, national hockey writer for Post Media, joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. Presenting sponsor, of course, is Scotiabank. Want to also give some shout-outs to some other great supporters. Tim Hortons, Qdoba Mexican Eats, Santa Lucia Pizza. They're all doing their part in making Toy Mountain 2019 a success.
There's pizza?
There is no pizza for you. You've already had, I think, 15 different food groups, and not one of them has been a fruit or a vegetable. When we come back, we're going to talk about those surprising Minnesota Wild. They've got points in 11 straight games. They're in a playoff spot. Who would have thunk it? You're listening.
Not me.
To Nobody. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Go on here. Hey, hey, hey.
So, boys, like I said, stuck with it. Gotta go to the game winner.
Zuki.
Yeah.
Holy. Oh! Oh! There you go, boys. There you go. Keep it going here.
It's good times in the Minnesota Wild dressing room. That was Jason Zucker getting the Wild game, you know, player of the game helmet or whatever nonsense they like to do. The Wild are 7-0-3 in their last 10.
There's joy in Joyland.
There's joy in Joyville, I believe is what it was. Wasn't it?
No, Joyland.
Was it Joyland?
Yeah. It's definitely Joyland.
Yeah. Oh, okay. 100%. It's
in
been
fact,
a while.
I just wrote about it like 2 days ago.
Really? You're still using that?
Yeah, it's funny. I like that. It's a good call, Coach Noel euphemism.
And speaking of Claude Noel, the boys had him on I think it was
a couple
was
days
it last
ago.
Game
in Dallas, maybe.
Yeah, they had him on the broadcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
There you go. Five in a row for the Wild. They are now into the second wild card spot, 3 points behind the Dallas Stars, and really nipping at the heels of the rest of the Central Division. Who saw this coming?
Nobody.
I mean, this was a Minnesota Wild team that started the season pretty poorly. The Jets defeated them. That was the Jets' home opener, right? That they defeated the Minnesota Wild.
Drew, they were 3-9.
Yeah. I mean,
they were last place in the Central Division, and people started talking about, you know, is Bruce Boudreau going to lose his job? And I think you have to give a lot of credit to not only Bill Guerin for sticking with Bruce Boudreau, but you have to give credit to Boudreau himself. I mean, this is a guy, last year of his contract, the team is 3-9. I mean, you're looking up at the standings and seeing Winnipeg, Colorado, everybody else in the division, and you just said it. I mean, they haven't lost a game in regulation in
11
games, 3 weeks. They haven't lost a game in regulation.
Five. Yeah, winners incredible. Of five in a row. It's absolutely incredible. 8-0-3 since November 14th.
And their home record is incredible. 7-1-2.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So it's bizarre that as we sit here on December 7th, mm-hmm. the Wild have played 9 more road games than they have home games. Yeah. I mean, going back to how...
And they haven't been particularly good on the road.
No, they've been completely average.
7-10-2.
Yeah, average on the road, 7-10-2, below average even.
I would say below average.
And then 7-1-2 on home ice, which is an incredible record.
Yeah.
I mean, is it going to continue? It's hard to believe that this impressive play is going to continue. But, you know, you look at the rest of the Central Division. You got the Predators who continue to struggle. You got the Chicago Blackhawks who continue to struggle. And the team that everybody thought was going to be, you know, fighting at the bottom with the Blackhawks was the Wild. And all of a sudden the Wild are in a playoff spot and playing some pretty damn good hockey.
Right. And at the beginning of this streak, I mean, you had some easier games. But, you know, you talk about the last few games. You've beaten Tampa Bay. You've beaten Florida. You've beaten Dallas. These are good teams. And, I mean, Tampa Bay is struggling, obviously, mm-hmm. and isn't the same team they were last year. But the point is, it's not like they're beating, you know, Detroit, L.A., New Jersey, teams like that. So the thing that impresses me the most about the Minnesota Wild is, you know, unfortunately, Devan Dubnyk has been away from the team. His wife, unfortunately, is dealing with a medical issue. And, you know, Alex Stalock mm-hmm. has played unbelievably. Yeah. And, you know, Kaapo Kähkönen also, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen his numbers. He's got 2 wins in his first 2 NHL games.
Right.
We're not sure if he's going to play tonight against Carolina. They haven't announced if it's going to be Kähkönen or Stalock. But the point is, I mean, for them to turn this around without their number one goaltender, Devan Dubnyk, who has been their number one goalie for so long now, is truly impressive. So love the fact that this is a score-by-committee type of team. It's not like they rely on, you know, 1, 2, 3 players. I mean, Jason Zucker, you mentioned at the top of the segment, he's been really good on that top line, obviously, with Eric Staal. And so no, you don't expect them to keep this pace up, Drew.
No. But they're
in it right now after 27, 28 games.
Koivu just went on IR.
Give them credit for clawing back into a playoff spot. And, you know, by the way, your family just walked in.
Yes, there they are. My wife and kids are showing up here to drop off some toys.
I love how Ezzy seamlessly just goes right to the...
they're dropping off some toys at Toy
Mountain. Well, I just
saw Laura,
and, oh, your kids are cute.
They are pretty cute.
I don't know where they get that from. It must be Laura.
It's certainly Laura. There's no question about that. It is 100% have to do with my wife. I don't bring any looks to the table whatsoever. But
Erin's holding a candy cane.
Well, that's good. She deserves a candy cane. She just dropped off she just donated a toy.
But isn't it interesting...
Are your kids going to run away when I go to hug them again?
I certainly hope they do.
Isn't it interesting, though, that Nashville and Minnesota swing that trade?
Yeah.
And everybody's thinking Nashville's adding pieces to kind of go for
Granlund for Fiala.
And so, you know, and everybody is panning everything that the Wild have done. And again, like, they just keep, and again, like I just said, they just put Koivu on IR. So he's, you know, he's a presence, obviously, that they want to have around the room. So they're hoping that probably won't be too long term. But it's just amazing to me that everybody was talking about Nashville. And to your point, Drew, everyone talked about Minnesota being a dog.
Yeah.
And we were looking past them. And now you've got a team that, again, the crazy part to me, and this just goes to show you about the whole parody of the NHL, is any team that goes, like, Dallas had a terrible start.
We have the same stroller, by the way.
That's good. Thank you, Ezra.
Went on a tremendous run, and now they're struggling a bit. Yep. The only team, to be honest with you, that I really think is, like, just unbelievable is Colorado.
Yeah.
Because I think Colorado has been phenomenal.
Despite their injuries.
Despite their injuries.
You know, we going back to last year with Minnesota, remember that who they lose last year right at the – they lost him for the season.
Matt Dumba.
Yeah, and so he had a ton of goals.
Right. He was having a great year. Then they lose Dumba for the rest of the season, and then they sort of fall off at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So you wonder, maybe did we overlook – did we look at the Wild without Dumba?
Well, Jared Spurgeon is out of the lineup. It's not going to be long-term.
Right.
But you wonder – I mean, Jared Spurgeon, I realize, you know, sometimes, you know, his advanced stats don't reflect this, but he's a really good defenseman, plays 20-plus minutes a night. And, you know, something, you know, Dave mentions Mikko Koivu, and obviously, you know, his numbers have gone down a little bit as he's gotten older, but he's still a very productive player. But the thing that stands out to me is I think the forward depth on the Wild has been underlooked. Like, you talk about that defense. I mean, we know, you know, Matt Dumba, Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon. These are good defensemen. But, you know, a guy like Ryan Donato, who they acquired last year, I mean,
from the Boston
he's
Bruins.
On the fourth line.
Yeah.
Ryan Hartman, Marcus Foligno, and Ryan Donato is your fourth line. Like, Joel Eriksson-Ek between Jordan Greenway and Luke Cunningham, that's been a really good line for them. Eriksson-Ek has taken a while to develop. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's really fit in nicely this year, and he's starting to produce. So, you know, we mentioned, you know, Stahl Zucker and Matt Zuccarello was the other player I didn't mention, but that's been a really good line. But the reality is there aren't any superstars on this team. Like, to me,
it's
there's
by committee.
And there's a lot of parallels, Dave, with the Islanders, I find.
I was thinking that, too.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's obviously they start with the goal out, but, you know, you talk about the importance of having a good backup goalie. We've talked often about that with Lauren Brossoit. I mean, Alex Stalock, previously with the Sharks.
Yeah.
Devan Dubnyk goes out and Stalock comes in, and sure, he's not, you know, playing at the same level as a Connor Hellebuck, but he's given them really good goaltending. He's giving them a chance to win every night. And Kaapo Kähkönen, not Kaapo Kakko, you know, has been a revelation as their third string goalie. So really impressive what they've been able to do. I don't know if they hang on to this wild card spot, Drew. Lots of hockey to be played, but what they've done over the last, you know, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, really impressive.
The Jets are going to see the Wild twice in the next month. 2 weeks from today, it's going to be a 1 o'clock puck drop in Minnesota. And then right after the new year, again, another 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon puck drop in Minnesota. So the Jets and the Wild, of course, will get more acquainted with each other after they already played right early on in the season. So the Jets will have to see this new look and newly performing Minnesota Wild team, see what they can do against them in the next couple of weeks.
Hopefully the Jets don't go 0-5 this year.
Well, they already won one game, so you don't have to worry about that. They got off the snide nice and early.
When was that? That was recently.
That was the home opener against the Wild.
Not that recently.
Not that recent. But your time frame is all skewed with your family situation.
Time is a construct, Drew.
I don't know what that means, but okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Detroit Red Wings. Max Boltman of TheAthletic.com covers them. He'll join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. And we're live on location at CF Polo Park, supporting the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Detroit Red Wings reporter Max Boltman. Max covers the Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. As you know, the Jets and the Red Wings twice next week. Tuesday night here in Winnipeg, Thursday night the return contest back in Detroit. Max, appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Max, you know, obviously the Red Wings are not off to a good start to the season, struggling, you know, at the bottom of the NHL standings, a goal differential of minus 56. If you're a Red Wings fan and you're trying to find some positive in what looks like a lot of negative, where are you finding that positive so far this season?
Well, there's not a lot. A lot of it at the beginning was coming from Anthony Mantha, who's having a breakout season, right around a point per game. Of course, he injures his lower body in a game against the New Jersey Devils, and now he's been out for a couple of weeks. But if you're looking for it, you're probably looking at Tyler Bertuzzi, who's having a little bit of a breakout in his own right, playing on the first line, playing quite well. And then Filip Hronek, the young defenseman, who has really stepped into his own, playing a huge role in big minutes as just a 22-year-old. So those are probably the two things that you can be really excited about. There's the Robbie Fabry addition that they made in a trade for Jacob DeLaRose from the St. Louis Blues. Fabry's got 10 points and 13 games, so he's been a welcome addition to that room, but still, like you said, with that goal differential, there's not going to be a whole lot of positives to point to.
So Max, I wanted to ask you about Robbie Fabbri, and you mentioned him there, so I'm still going to ask the question, but you know, how nice of a story really is that? Because you talked about, I mean, there's been bright spots, but there have been few bright spots, and he's stepped right into the lineup, and you know, he's got 6 goals, 11 points in 22 games, and you know, he's just been such a nice story because he really just didn't seem to find a fit there in St. Louis, found himself a healthy scratch. Should mention 10 points in 13 games with Detroit, so almost a point per game player with Detroit. But just how nice has that been? Because this is a guy that obviously, you know, has a lot of offensive talent.
Yeah, it's been big, and goal scoring has been one of their biggest issues. You know, you look at their last 5-6 games, the puck's not been going in the net very much. So having Fabbri around, I mean, when they acquired him, they won the first 3 games they had him against Boston, Vegas, and Anaheim. So he was an immediate impact, scored a couple power play goals in his first game. They've just had a gaping hole in the top 6, and he fit right in. He's been playing a lot on the second line with Andreas Athanasiou and Valtteri Filppula, but since Mantha went out, he's seen some time on the first line too, and he hasn't looked out of place. So certainly a big missing piece for them, and he's a restricted free agent after this season, but I think of all the Red Wings restricted free agents beyond Anthony Mantha, Andreas Athanasiou, and Tyler Bertuzzi, he's making the kind of the strongest case to be back and be in a prominent role in the future.
You know, Max, one player folks here in Winnipeg are very familiar with is Eric Comrie, obviously a Jets draft pick who played both with the Jets and the Manitoba Moose. The Wings swung a trade with the Coyotes to acquire him. I believe he backed up 1 game already. What is the game plan for Eric Comrie? Do you think he's going to get an opportunity to be a guy, you know, who's relied upon in net in Detroit? And do you expect him to play either of the 2 games against the Jets?
Yeah, we'll see. I feel like I should be asking you about Comrie right now because he's still so new. But I do expect him to get some kind of opportunity here. I don't think they would have made the move for him if they were just going to let him sit. So Jimmy Howard's been out. He's back up to Jonathan Bernier. They don't have any back-to-backs, which makes it tough. There's not a no-brainer game for him to start. But, yeah, you'd think that after a couple, they've had a long week of practice this week, play the Penguins tonight, and then obviously a couple against his former team. I'd be surprised if he didn't get at least one of those.
Max Boltman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park supporting the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. We'll be here till 9 p.m. tonight. Come drop off a new unwrapped toy, make a cash donation, get into the holiday spirit. Max, Moritz Seider, obviously a former first-round pick of the Red Wings. How do you see his development happening so far and sort of how it's going to factor into the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships?
Yeah, like a lot of people, I didn't know a whole lot about Moritz Seider when the Red Wings picked him 6th overall. I mean, I certainly was familiar with the name and had watched him play a little bit at the Men's World Championships just on TV. But since I've gotten to know him and seen him at training camp, prospect tournament, preseason, and several times in Grand Rapids, he's just rock solid as a defenseman. I don't know that I've seen an 18-year-old defender play that physically. And I know the Winnipeg fans know all about kind of surprising first-round defensemen because Billy Hanel has been awesome every time I've seen him, too. So he's turned out to be a pretty good pick. And I think that into the World Juniors, playing for Team Germany that hasn't been there since 2015, that'll be a really fun place to watch him. That group is loaded with Canada, Russia, and the U.S. So it'll be a big stage for Seider to test himself at.
Max, we were talking about Filip Zadina earlier, obviously a high draft pick of the Red Wings. He spent the majority of the season with Grand Rapids, put up some good numbers. He's been recently recalled. We expect to see him against the Jets. Maybe you can provide a little bit more insight into that. But what are the Red Wings expecting out of Zadina? He's obviously still a young player, and the sky is the limit for him. Obviously has a high ceiling. But what type of role are they going to ask Zadina to play, you know, in the short term and for the rest of the year?
Yeah, that's the big question right now. I think if everything would have gone according to their plan with no injuries, he might still be in Grand Rapids. But the Mantha injury especially forced them to make a move, and he's played quite well since he came up. He's not getting a ton of time. He's played mostly on the third line, but he's getting first power play minutes. He's got a couple assists. He's improvement. So I think long term, obviously, they expect him to be a top 6 first line forward. for them, and a winger who can score, who can make a little bit of plays. I think he gets billed as just a sniper, but he can pass the puck quite well too. And then in the near term, though, I think they're taking things pretty day to day in terms of how they're going to deploy him. The big controversy right now here in Detroit is just about everybody wants to see him on the first line. They haven't put him there yet, so that's something to watch as well.
You know, Max, Jeff Lassell has been in the organization both as a head coach with the Grand Rapids Griffins, now obviously a head coach with the Detroit Red Wings. How is he handling this season? Obviously, you know, there's an expectation. Nobody expected Detroit to be a playoff team, but how is he handling it? And is there any hot seat aspect for him, or is it understood in Detroit that this was a rebuilding year and they were just working towards a long-term goal, not something short-term?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of people have wondered about that, too. And, you know, Steve Eisman has publicly told NHL.com that he feels like he's seen a little bit of progress and is reasonably happy with the job the staff has done, even in spite of the losing. But obviously, he's not a especially public executive, so he doesn't talk a whole lot about it. But, I think with Blashill, I talked to some players this week about one of the things that he's been doing to try and get them through the stretch, which is showing them positive clips of what's worked, not constantly focusing on all the ways that things are going wrong. And I think that's something that, you know, has been really important in this stretch for guys, is to see, you know, it's not all bad. There are things that are close. There are things that are working. So it's an interesting question, because I think when you lose this much, it's natural to say something's going to have to obviously change at some point here. But I don't know if that's going to be the coach, and I don't know if that's going to be during the season. I think there's a whole lot to still play out, and certainly they're still playing hard every night.
Max Boltman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Max covers the Detroit Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. Max, we have to ask you about a Winnipeg defenseman on the Red Wings, Madison Bowie. He was acquired, of course, at the trade deadline last year from the Washington Capitals in exchange for Nick Jensen. He's got into 22 games so far for the Red Wings this season. How would you evaluate his play so far this year for the Red Wings?
Yeah, and he had one of the most impressive goals this season. I can't remember which game it was, but he had like a falling down goal where he slid the puck in. So it's been nice to see him get some offense going here and be in the lineup fairly often. He's been out a couple of games recently, so I'm up and down certainly. But I think that, you know, Madison certainly is an awesome kid and one of the best guys in that room. So it's been good to see him get a whole lot of opportunity, especially on a team that's rebuilding and has the opportunity available.
Max, wanted to ask you about Joe Valeno, the other first-round pick back in 2018. And I remember back a couple of years ago, a lot of scouts had Joe Valeno much higher in the first round. Some had him going in the first half of the first round. And, you know, just taking a look at his numbers recently, and, you know, he's only got 3 goals in 25 games. And granted, I don't watch the Grand Rapids Griffin often, but, you know, when you talk about a prospect like that, I'm sure Red Wings fans would like to see better offensive numbers. I mean, what's going on, and how concerned are the Wings that he's maybe not producing as quickly as they would like?
Well, I think this is one of those things where I don't know if people always appreciate the jump, and certainly you guys know with the Manitoba Moose up there, how big the jump from Canadian junior hockey right into the American Hockey League can be sometimes. And they saw it with Philip Zadina last year out of the same Quebec League. It can take some time. Valeno, especially those first 10 to 12 games, I don't think was on the score sheet a whole lot. But lately, it's been improving. I think he focuses a lot on being a 200-foot center. They've got him killing penalties. He does play in the second power play, but, you know, it's obviously a big picture thing. It's not just about the score sheet for him. So I think, you know, the way that he sees it, it's been a challenge. And I think I'm seeing progress from him from the start of the season to now.
Max, hard to judge someone's tenure after just 8 months, but what has the Steve Eisman hire in Detroit meant for the organization, and how is it being received?
Yeah, it's a good point, because I think that, you know, certainly only a few moves to judge on, but a lot of them have been pretty impactful. I think, obviously, you can talk about the draft with Moritz Seider. That won't play out for years to come yet, but in the short term, a couple of free agent signings, and Patrick Nemeth and Valtteri Filppula have been important so far, and then obviously the Fabry trade. He's taken some chances on trying to improve the team at the margin. Those, I think, are the kind of moves that Red Wings fans have been really excited to see. The thing, though, that I think is interesting is I think the team maybe feels a little bit farther away than people realize. That would be myself included, because I think with the way things finished last season for them, with the way Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, Tyler Bertuzzi played down the stretch, it seemed like, hey, maybe this year they take a little bit of a step forward. That's obviously not been the case. And so I think people are kind of reevaluating right now just how long this rebuild might take.
that was going to be my next question, Max, and we'll let it go on this one. You know, that perception that, you know, they were expecting maybe not a playoff spot, but to be at least more competitive and not at the bottom of the NHL so far this year. Is that being felt, you know, within the organization? Is that being felt as a disappointment within the organization so far this season?
Well, I think when you think about the locker room, the players felt like they could prove people wrong who did think they were going to be near that bottom three, bottom five. And obviously there's going to be disappointment and frustration inherent to that. So I can't speak for Yzerman or the front office in that sense, but I think obviously the players were hoping for better than has been the case so far.
Max Boltman covers the Detroit Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. The Jets and the Red Wings twice next week, Tuesday in Winnipeg, and then the return match Thursday in Motor City. Max, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take care, Max. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on location at CF Polo Park, supporting Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. When we come back, one final segment, we'll touch on the Manitoba Moose. We'll look at what their week was like. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Here's McKenzie at the top of the zone. 13 seconds left in the 5-on-3. Two men coming out of the box. Vesalainen waits, looks towards the net, pass out in front, redirected, they score! Christian Vesalainen off a skated in. And with 4 seconds left in the 5-on-3, the Moose get a break.
From last night's Moose-Wolves game, a game that the Moose would go on to win 3-1, Christian Vesalainen scoring on a 5-on-3 power play. The rematch goes tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
That's appropriate. It's a teddy bear toss tonight.
There you go.
So there'll be lots of teddy bears thrown at the Bell MTS Place.
Teddy bears being thrown. There's teddy bears being given away right behind us as well. We're
and
live
the Winnipeg
on the
Ice are also having a teddy bear toss the same night.
Well, throw your teddy bears is basically what it boils down to. We're live on location here at CF Polo Park in support of the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain 2019. We're going to be live on location until 9 p.m. tonight. So come on down, bring a new unwrapped toy, make a cash donation, enter your name in a draw. For
a guy
some
just
great
walked by with a huge, massive, I guess huge and massive are the same word.
Yes.
Pink elephant.
I believe he's also wearing velvet.
I guess we know who the elephant in the room is.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Ezra. If we can just cut Ezra's mic for the next 9 minutes, that'd be great. Appreciate that. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, Calvin Evans is performing two shows, 7:45 and 10:30. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And remember, if you're looking to make New Year's Eve plans, it's not too soon. Get on it right now. Two shows to see Rob Pugh at Rumors, rumorscomedyclub.com.
So are we going to do it? New Year's Eve, me and you?
I'm not going to be in town, and no, even if I was going to be in town, I'm going to avoid you like the plague. In fact, that's my New Year's resolution. Let's talk about the Manitoba Moose. Victor's last night, Dave Minuk, 3-1 over the Wolves. Mikael Burden got close again to getting the puck, to getting that empty net goal.
He's going to score eventually. Like, it's coming.
Yeah, the players after, the coach Vincent after the game, everybody talked about it. Everybody knows it is an inevitability that he's going to score a goal. You know, the Moose had taken a 3-1 lead on a Skyler McKenzie. Actually, pretty aggressive play. I like, he's been kind of coming up of late a little bit more for the Manitoba Moose. He's he's quite a fiery little guy, but he's been, you know, he put it in from behind the blue line to make it a 3-1 game.
Into the empty net.
Into the empty net.
It wasn't just bad
then,
goaltending.
No. And then it was 3-1, and obviously, Chicago dumped it in to try and, create some pressure into the Moose zone and try and get back into the game. And, of course, you can't do that with Mikael Burden back there. And Pascal Vincent oftentimes talks about what a weapon he is to nullify dump-ins because of what he can do with the puck. And I actually thought yesterday he was doing it a little less. He wasn't being as aggressive with the puck as he had been traditionally this season. But, you know, obviously 3-1, Coach Vincent knows he's firing it. Mikael Burden knows he's firing it. Every fan in the building knows he's firing it. And he fired it at the empty net and missed just by a lot closer this time than he was the last time. So, to Ezzy's point, yeah, I think he's going to get it in.
Nobody's going to be more happy than Dave when Burden scores, because you know, we often talk about this. There aren't many goalies that play the puck like that. Like, you could point to, like, a Pekka Rinne, a Mike Smith. Ben Bishop's pretty good at playing the puck.
I think Marty Biron's still mad at you guys for not mentioning him last
week. He didn't like that. That's
right. And obviously, you know, Marty was good at playing the puck. There was another Marty that was pretty good talking about Broder. But
Eddie the Eagle.
Yeah, Eddie the Eagle, Marty Turco. I mean, we could go on and on, but the reality is they're not a dime a dozen. So, you know, it's a huge asset. Yeah. It's just fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun to watch a goalie try to go for the empty net. You just rarely see that, except if you're a Manitoba Moose fan. So, you know, Burden's having a great year, not only going for the empty net, but, you know, playing really well between the pipes, picking up a lot of wins.
So the Moose improved to 13-12 on the season. It's sort of bizarre. You tweeted about this earlier in the week, that they played 25 games and they've all been decided in regulation.
Well, it's not that they haven't won. No, they haven't lost a game in extra time. So I think they have won. They may have an overtime win.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying that they have. But they have no. They're just three teams in the AHL right now: Springfield, Tucson, and Manitoba, who don't have a loss in overtime or a shootout.
Okay. Yeah. So pardon me.
It's still unusual to see a record 13-12-0-0.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're used to seeing something in the third or in the AHL's case, the fourth category
That's
in
right.
the standings. 13-12. They finished their seven-game road trip, their longest road trip of the season. They finished that on Tuesday night, losing to Rockford. 3-4 on the road trip. How would you evaluate the road trip that they went through?
You know what? You're playing Toronto, who's the best team in the East, and then you had to play one against Milwaukee. That's the game that knocked Sammy Niku out of the lineup. He's missed four games. Coach Vincent, obviously, if you're just tuning in, told me yesterday that he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought it was day-to-day. Now it's turned out, obviously, it's week-to-week. And it was a pretty good road trip. They won the first game in Belleville, and then they beat Grand Rapids and they beat Chicago. So overall, pretty good. I mean, again, Milwaukee's just a really dominant team, and Toronto's a very good team. So I kind of expected those three losses. The one in Rockford could have gone either way.
So the end of a road trip.
Yeah, end of the road trip. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, the end of a road trip, first home game back. But it's a weird schedule. They play two games at home, last night against Chicago, tonight against Chicago. Then they go on the road for five more games. So just unusual the way it is. But then, you know, to Tazzy's point, lots of late December, early January, Moose and Jets hockey. And the Jets are now on the ice for their practice.
So the latest Jets practice news will come on, of course, illegalcurve.com. But you look at this Moose team, when they get, and we're assuming that, you know, it's not going to be much longer until they get guys like Logan Shaw back from the Jets' fourth line.
Yep.
They got Michael Spacek, who's been sitting up in the press box for the last, 3 weeks?
Making his AHL salary in 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean,
basically.
He's been playing up. He's been sitting in the Jets press box not playing, so it'll take him some time to get back into it. So Moose tonight against the Chicago Wolves, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. That's it for us, of course, this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to everybody who joined us down here at CF Polo Park in support of Toy Mountain and the Salvation Army. Always nice to see everyone came by and said hello, and thanks to everyone for donating their toys and any cash donations. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes. It's wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you for my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, for Chris Curry back at the studio, for Mikey here live on location. Thanks for listening. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.